The headlines: Iran calls for immediate international action over Israel's acts of aggression against Syria after a new Israeli airstrike hit the country. North Korea test fires an intercontinental ballistic missile, saying it shows the country's capacity of fatal nuclear counterattack. And Russia says the U.S. is trying to foment the crisis in Ukraine by accusing Moscow of committing crimes against humanity during the war. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Israel has carried out a new airstrike on Syria, targeting the capital Damascus with missiles. The attack left five people, including a soldier, dead and 15 civilians wounded. The Syrian army says Israel targeted several residential buildings, but most of the missiles were intercepted by the air defense. Iran has condemned the attack. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani slammed what he called the West's shameful silence over repeated violations of Syria's sovereignty. He called on international organizations, especially the UN Security Council, to take immediate action. Kanani said the subsequent Israeli and Daesh attacks on Saturday and early Sunday shows a natural and inherent bond of the two terrorist entities. He said that comes at a time when Syria is reeling from the recent devastating earthquake. Palestinian resistance groups have also condemned the Israeli attack. Political commentator Paul Arudi says the Israeli attack on Syria amid earthquake relief efforts shows Tel Aviv's atrocities have no limits.
I would have to say that Israel wants to do this to show that nothing stands in its way from conducting business as usual. Not a new government. In other words, under Netanyahu, again, it's going to be business as usual. And not an earthquake. They're not going to be merciful under an earthquake. They're still going to attack the people that they regard as their enemies, who haven't attacked Israel in years. So to make sense of it, you merely have to think about motivation and what they have to gain from it. And the motivation is to impress some of their electorate, their constituency, and to show that they are equally belligerent as their predecessors and all this nonsense.
Today marks the 15th day of a hunger strike by a senior member of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement held in Israeli jail. Gader Adnan is protesting against the extension of his solitary confinement. The 44-year-old was arrested during a raid on his home near the occupied West Bank city of Jenin earlier this month. He has been arrested 12 times by Israel and spent nearly 8 years behind bars. More than 7,000 Palestinians are currently held in Israeli jails. Resistance movement Hamas has vowed to continue its support for Palestinians languishing in Israeli prisons. Hamas says that the Israeli regime is subjecting the detainees to the most brutal forms of abuse. Israel has recently stepped up its crackdown on Palestinians in protest at the atrocities. The Palestinians have launched a general strike in occupied Al-Quds and several West Bank cities. Thousands of Israelis have flocked to the streets for a seventh straight week to denounce judicial reforms proposed by the new far-right cabinet. Protesters gathered in front of the Knesset in Tel Aviv, waving flags and placards. The reform bill is currently being debated in parliament and inching closer to approval, but the plan has triggered protests with people hitting the streets for weeks to express their anger at what they call a fascist cabinet. They believe the proposed overhaul would fatally undermine checks and balances. If approved, the law would limit the powers of a top court to overturn the cabinet's decision. North Korea says it has launched an intercontinental ballistic missile on Saturday to confirm its readiness for what it called a fatal nuclear counterattack. The North's official news agency described the test as a sudden launching drill ordered by leader Kim Jong-un. The report said the move demonstrated Pyongyang's actual war capacity against hostile forces. The ICBM landed in waters off Japan. The launch comes after the North warned of unprecedentedly strong response to the upcoming drills between the U.S. and South Korea. The missile test has drawn an angry reaction from the U.S.
The DPRK once again launched a ballistic missile, this one apparently falling in the exclusive economic zone of Japan. That's happened before in recent months, but this is yet again provocative act by North Korea. We call on others to condemn this action, to take appropriate steps, including the effective enforcement of sanctions.
Japan's foreign minister has also called on North Korea's move absolutely unacceptable provocation. That was also echoed by South Korea's foreign minister, who is warning Pyongyang of more severe sanctions. South Korea and the U.S. have staged joint air drills involving an American bomber in response to North Korea's missile launch. Pyongyang has always maintained that it is the U.S. and South Korea that are undermining regional stability. The North says it is watching their moves, and it will take corresponding and powerful counteraction. The death toll from Cyclone Gabrielle in New Zealand has increased to 11, with thousands still missing. The fatalities increased after search teams recovered two more bodies from the hard-hit Hawke's Bay region. The death toll is expected to rise as more than 6,400 people remain unaccounted for. The cyclone hit New Zealand's northernmost region in a week and tracked down the East Coast. It has caused widespread devastation, disrupting telecommunications and causing shortage of fresh water. Roads have been damaged too, restricting access to some affected areas. Prime Minister Chris Hipkins says Gabrielle is the biggest natural disaster to hit New Zealand this century. Russia has rejected U.S. allegations of committing crimes against humanity in Ukraine. It says the U.S. is fueling the crisis in Ukraine through supplying arms to Kiev, and it is just trying to justify that. Moscow's ambassador to the U.S. says such accusations also aim to demonize Russia, calling them part of a hybrid war against the country. The reaction followed comments by the U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris at the Munich Security Conference. There, she said that the U.S. has formally concluded that Russia has committed crimes against humanity in Ukraine. Also last year, the U.S. claimed that Russia had committed war crimes in Ukraine. Moscow has repeatedly denied targeting civilians during the year-long war. It has in turn accused Ukraine of committing crimes against humanity against people in the eastern Donbass region. The United Nations is sounding the alarm over the health and nutrition crises in Afghanistan. The World Health Organization says tens of thousands of Afghan children and women will suffer from acute malnutrition in 2023. Rahmatullah Baghban reports from Kabul.
I am visiting a children's hospital in Kabul, which is said to be overwhelmed with malnourished kids. Every few hours, a sick child is brought into the malnourishment ward, while doctors and nurses are racing against time to save the youngest victims of Afghanistan's crisis.
Unfortunately, this year, undernourished cases, especially severe acute malnutrition, have significantly surged compared to last year. Constant hunger and poverty and differing diseases are to blame for this, which puts us in dire need of more supplies and medical aid.
As you know, Afghans are gripped with poverty and economic problems. As a result, we are overwhelmed with a huge number of malnutrition. We are running out of beds, and sometimes we are forced to reject new entries. Besides, childhood wasting as well as child mortality have also soared.
The World Health Organization says in 2023, around 17,000 Afghan babies and mothers are expected to suffer from severe acute malnutrition, while over 2.3 million children may suffer from moderate acute malnutrition. The UN body adds that an estimated 28.3 million people, which comprises two-thirds of Afghanistan's population, need urgent relief assistance.
We are a family of 10. My husband is a shoemaker. This malnourished child of mine is 3 months old. Two of my children died as a result of wasting and stunting.
Afghan people's miseries are growing day by day. Unemployment, poverty, and famine have gripped the society, with poor and middle-class households being hit hard. Many have brought their malnourished kids here, and I think it is because they have no food in their houses. We are calling on the global community not to ignore Afghans amid political and economic crises.
Concerns are on the rise among Afghans over their isolation from the international community and major cuts in global aid following the Taliban's takeover and U.S. withdrawal from their country. Afghanistan has one of the highest rates of malnutrition in the world. Afghans are calling on the global community not to leave them alone amid poverty and hunger. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Hundreds of Rohingya refugees continue to languish in detention centers across India. As Munawar Zaman reports, their families are urging authorities to release them on humanitarian grounds.
Rohingya refugee camp on the outskirts of New Delhi is no more than an open prison for the members of the community who face constant threats and intimidation from law enforcement agencies. They say all their activities are being monitored and reported to the local police station on a daily basis. A member of the community is given that task, but that is not the only trouble. This woman says her son has been held in a detention center for months despite having a UN refugee card. With eyes full of tears and a numb voice, she revealed her ordeal.
My son was picked up by police along with his wife from outside our shanty 4 months ago. He did not commit any crime. He has been in a detention center for a long time now. I'm worried for him. The UN Refugee Agency says they are working on the case, but nothing has been done so far. He was working as a day laborer in nearby colonies. He did nothing wrong. I humbly urge for his release. We thank God that India gave us shelter, but there is constant fear of detention in the camp.
In recent weeks, the Delhi High Court ordered a joint inspection of the Rohingya Detention Center in New Delhi by officials of concerned agencies over the alleged lack of basic amenities. The court was hearing a plea of a female refugee who is facing bad health conditions due to the lack of basic facilities in the detention center.
My brother recently got married and he was detained just 3 days after his wedding along with his wife. Since then, he's in a detention center. My mother is blind and she cries every day for him. We have been living here for years and we are grateful to India for giving us refugees. I sell vegetables on the streets and similarly other men do menial work, but we are scared now since detention fear is looming across camps.
Most refugees here have heartbreaking tales of the past, and those memories of carnage and exodus are haunting them. Based on official estimates, India is home to some 40,000 Rohingya refugees, but independent reports put the figures at hundreds of thousands. Most of the refugees I spoke with feared that their identity would be disclosed, given the high risk of detention. Scores have also gone into hiding at undisclosed locations across India. They have a horrific tales of separation from their families amid a persistent deportation campaign and an intensified crackdown against the community. Munawar Zaman, the outskirts of New Delhi.
An Islamic center in Italy has recently released a book on the life of the late Iranian commander, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. The book's title is A God's Fighter. Our correspondent has more.
The Rome-based Islamic center Imam Mahdi has recently published a book on the late Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Titled A God's Fighter, the Italian-language book revolves around General Soleimani's endeavors to defend the oppressed people. A man, quote, driven by an unshakable faith in God, The book is a collection of messages, thoughts and letters by General Soleimani, a project that has been supported by all the members of the Imam Mahdi Center.
Irki.
Who did General Soleimani fight for? By publishing this book, we wanted to shed a light on a man who was always described as an anti-something. Yes, he was against Zionism, he fought against Daesh, but he did all that for God, and that's why we call him a God's fighter in our book. This project intends to fill a void in Italy, as for far too long, all accounts on General Soleimani have distorted his true image.
In 2020, 40 days after U.S. assassination of Major General Qasem Soleimani, hundreds of his posters were hung across many Italian cities. Initiatives to honor the slain Iranian military officer were held in Rome and Milan. Imam Mahdi Center's book on Soleimani also contains speeches by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani on General Soleimani's martyrdom. The publication also contains photos portraying Iran's former top military commander.
Finding good quality photos of Soleimani was a daunting task. There are only a few good shots of him around. He was not a poser, he was a humble man and he didn't love to be in the spotlight. My favorite photos are the ones depicting General Soleimani with kids and also his mother.
General Qasem Soleimani, similar to my father, because he caused that I love Islam more and more. He is my hero because he always helped the weak country or a weak Islamic country. I'm proud of him.
The book closes with 20 short stories on the life of General Soleimani, his relationship with his family, and with the late Iraqi anti-terror commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Max Civili, Rome.
And now with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Tell about yourself.
Ameri Kshmanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of
writing. Listeners special.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, February 19th, 2023. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails, letters, and messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcast and tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. This is Listeners Special, and here we've received reception reports from around the world. From Yaroslav Mer Kashe from Russia, from Ratan Kumar Paul from India, and from Nektarios Manousos from Greece. So, Yaroslav, Nektarios, and Ratan Kumar, thank you very much for sending us these reception reports. And we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. As you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to IRIB English Radio because these reception reports actually enable us to provide a better service for our listeners around the world. So, all of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving an electronic QSL from us. And of course, we've received many emails from around the world, which I mention some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read these emails. From Algeria, we've received an email from Omar Lassas. From Russia, we've received an email from Yaroslav Merkashev. Najmuddin from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. From Malaysia, we've received an email from Muhammad Briel, one of our old and regular listeners. And the last but not the least is an email from Avinash Chikot from India. Please stay with us. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and from Algeria, we've received an email from Omar Lassas. Let's see what Omar says. Dear friends at English section of IRIB, I hope you're doing well. I wish you a happy World Radio Day 2023. Thank you for airing informative programs. Keep up the good work. Kind regards. Salam from Tehran and warm greetings to you, Omar Lassas from Algeria, and thank you very much for writing this email to us, to IRIB English Radio staff. We also wish you a very happy World Radio Day 2023, which happened to be on February 13th last week. Thank you very much for this email, Omar Lassas from Algeria. And thank you for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Please accept our electronic QSL as verification and write to us soon. We are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And of course, listening to your views about our broadcast. And from Russia, we've received an email from Yaroslav Merkashev. Yaroslav says, hello, dear staff of IRIB English Radio. My name is Yaroslav Merkashev, and I'm sending this reception report from Samar, Russia. I'm also attaching an audio file to my email. I wish you good luck and prosperity of the radio station. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of Islamic Republic of Iran. And thank you very much for this email, Yaroslav from Russia. We also wish you luck, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Please accept our electronic QSL or EQSL as verification. Welcome back. As I said, Najmuddin, one of our old and regular listeners from India, has sent us an email. Najmuddin says, dear sir or madam, assalamu alaikum. wish you a very happy World Radio Day 2023. News and News Highlights program of your radio is always my favorite broadcast. This week, you presented some special discussion on Iran and Iranian Revolution that I found very informative. Kindly send me new program and frequency schedule and some IRIB souvenirs. Thank you. Salam and warm greetings to you, and thank you very much for your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Najmuddin from India. So, you're interested in the news section and news highlights program. Good. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Najmuddin from India, unfortunately, sending any items, I mean souvenirs, promotional items, including frequency schedule, is not possible at the time of pandemic. So to find the frequency schedule, you can refer to our websites at parstoday.ir/en, and there you can find the information you need. Also, please accept our EQSL, electronic QSL, as verification. Anyway, thank you very much for sending us this email, Najmuddin from India. And from Malaysia, we've received an email from Muhammad Briel. Muhammad Briel says, Assalamu alaikum, greetings from Malaysia. You may be interested to know that the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran was received on shortwave frequency here in Kuala Lumpur area. A detailed reception report of this English language broadcast may be found in my email. Should it be correct, your QSL card would be very much appreciated. Thank you and best wishes. Salam and greetings to you from Tehran, the capital city of the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Muhammad Briel from Malaysia, one of our old and regular listeners. I appreciate you for sending this email to us, so please accept our EQSL as verification. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Muhammad Briel from Malaysia. Don't forget to tell us your views about our broadcast, Muhammad. And after a short break, I will be back with you. And the last email in this edition of Listeners Special is an email from Avinash Chikat from India. Avinash says, I am pleased to report the reception of your English language transmissions of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on shortwave. I hope that you'd find this report of some use. If found correct, kindly verify these with your QSL card or even an EQSL. First of all, salam and greetings to you, and thank you very much for this email, Avinash from India. So please accept our electronic QSL as verification. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon, Avinash Chikat from India. Welcome back. So we had a great time being with you in this edition of Listeners Special on February 19th, 2023. Anyway, art is long, but life is short, as I always say. But before saying goodbye, let me appreciate those of our great listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports as well as emails and letters from around the world, including Yaroslav Merkashev from Russia, Nektarios Manousos from Greece, Ratan Kumar Pol from India, Omar Lassas from Algeria, as well as Najmuddin from India, Mohammad Briel from Malaysia, and Avinash Chikat from India. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special Program and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Now, the situation of Palestinians would be much different today if Islamic countries had united and fought against the establishment of the Zionist entity from the very beginning. This is according to the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, during his speech commemorating the day when Prophet Muhammad became a prophet. In his address to Iranian officials as well as Islamic leaders from other countries, he said that enemies resorting to Iranophobia is because of Iran's outward support for the Palestinians. And the leader said Tehran will continue to support Palestine in any way possible and said that all Islamic countries have a responsibility to condemn Israeli atrocities and to be united with each other. Well, we're going to talk more about this situation overall dealing with the Palestinians. And first, I'd like to welcome my guests to the program. Elijah McNear, journalist and political analyst out of Brussels. And Fra Hughes, journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast. Thank you both for being with us. Let's start this off in Brussels. Tell me your overall perspective. I mean, when Ayatollah Khamenei used this occasion to mark the importance of the Palestinian cause for the Muslim world, your overall perspective on and why that was chosen and significance of it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming.
The point of the Palestinian cause, it is the forgotten cause, because most the Arab nations are normalizing with Israel, and the international community, including the Western community, is no longer advertising for the right cause of the Palestinians to return to their land and have their own state. So it is very important to always bring out the Palestinian cause, because it represents the injustice that a large number of the population, the people of Palestine, are suffering. And because the West seems to be, claims to be, very sensitive to human rights, and when we see nothing is happening, then we see other countries like in Iran, in Lebanon, in Syria, in Iraq, in Yemen, and a few other countries who are really concerned about the Palestinian cause and support the Palestinian cause. We see how the injustice is hitting the Palestinian cause in a place where they have absolutely no right. It is the only place in the world where Israel maintained a prison for the bodies, 375 bodies maintained by Israel. In the yearly annual report that I've seen only a week ago, when the Joseph Borrell, the vice president of the EU Commission, acknowledged that there were 150 Palestinians, of which 33 children were killed last year. The report never mentioned anything about it. The UN condemned it. The US condemned the Israeli building of settlement, yet the settlements are built since 1948. There is no accountability whatsoever to the Israelis. This is why someone needs to remind the world about the right cause of the Palestinian, keep it alive in the memory, particularly when we see the youth in Palestine are not forgetting and are claiming their territory back.
Well, Frank Hughes, you know, Iran has never hidden its support for the Palestinian and has paid a big price because of its support for the Palestinian cause. I mean, your overall analysis as a journalist of why do you think that Tehran has been so insistent and consistent with its support on Palestine since the beginning of the revolution, really, in 1979?
Hello, everyone. I think what we're maybe witnessing in Iran, that was a people's-led revolution, so we can assume that some of the policies that were absorbed into the Islamic Republic of Iran, not necessarily into the constitution, but into the fibre of society, into the body politics of what's happening on the ground. I think Iran is a bulwark against Zionism. If we look at Syria, I believe the main reason why Syria was attacked is because it is also a bulwark against Zionism, aggression and expansionism in West Asia. I think they were going for the domino effect of first we create ISIS, Daesh will destroy Syria, and then we'll either send in that army of mercenaries, murderers, and bloodthirsty psychopaths, either into the Caucasus or against Iran. So Iran has the moral high ground. The Iranian government, the people of the world, actually, I believe, the majority of the people of the world support the Palestinian people in their call for self-determination and sovereignty. But it is the Zionist-supporting, Zionist-leaning governments of these countries that refuse to acknowledge the plight and the suffering and the oppression of the Palestinian people under the apartheid Israeli military occupation. So people support Palestine, governments support Tel Aviv and Zionism. But I think the one place where you find, it's not just the one place, but one of the few places that you find the people and the government are walking in tandem on Palestine is Iran, is Yemen. It would have been Libya. It is Syria. It might have been Iraq, although more and more the Iraqi government seems to be standing up for Palestinian rights. And the crocodile tears and the hypocritical hand-wringing of the West about the continuing building of the illegal settlements, the continuing massacre of unarmed civilians in Palestine, in the occupied West Bank, by the Israeli forces, just shows that the West has fallen into a morass of immorality and corrupt politics, and one of the few beacons of political morality, I believe, in the world is in West Asia, and it is Iran, and it is Syria, and it is the likes of Cuba and Venezuela and Nicaragua, governments and Yemen, governments where people stand up, where the governments stand up for their people. And that is the way politics should be. And Iran should have everyone's support as it stands firmly against Zionist aggression.
Okay, well, Elijah, how much do you think that Tehran's support for Palestinian has led to this Iran phobia or anti-Iran sentiments that we see?
This is one of the elements that the West uses to attack Iran, because it is a question of ideology for Iran to support Palestine and the Palestinians. It is also part of the Iranian constitution to support the oppressed people around the world. So anything that Iran is doing is criticized and the country is demonized because Iran, first, is not submitted to the West. Secondly, it is claiming the right of the Palestinian, which is their legitimate right. And this is for the West, they see it as a danger to Israel expansion and existence, and Israel screams very loud, saying Iran wants to get rid of us, not acknowledging that they are really stealing the rights of the Palestinian, constructing settlement, misbehaving with the Palestinian, committing crime against humanity, against the UN Charter. So because of these elements, the behavior of Iran is called malign, because it doesn't fit with the Western mentality, it doesn't fit with the Western objectives. On the contrary, it contradicts it, because Iran is supporting the Palestinian, and supporting the Palestinian, like the Palestinian told us many times publicly, there are no limits and no conditions for what Iran is doing to the Palestinian, which means for the first time we see a genuine relationship where a country is not imposing its demand or its condition or its politics on another country or other people, the population, particularly in Gaza and the West Bank, without demanding anything in exchange. So the only objective is to free Palestine, and this is something that the West can't afford, because there's nothing is given for free. And that's why the model that Iran is offering is extremely dangerous for the West.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Hughes, we saw during the recent World Cup how many Muslims sympathize with the Palestinian cause. However, most of their governments have been bullied or bought off, basically, into accepting Israel or turning a blind eye to the atrocities. Do you think that we're in the process of seeing a growing schism or separation between these Muslim nations and these rulers who have submitted to the Zionists, or your assessment of this whole situation?
I think there has always been that disconnect. I mean, I did mention earlier that I feel the people of the world as such support the Palestinians as an oppressed people who deserve the right to self-determination, yet it is the governments who support the Zionist apartheid state. It's exactly the same in West Asia. A lot of the Gulf states, Saudi Arabia, if we go back to the Sykes-Picot Agreement and the redrawing of the borders in what they call the Middle East, I mean, all the problems created today stem from them. A lot of those countries, the Gulf monarchies, they send their soldiers and their generals to Sandhurst to be trained. They send their children to Oxford to be educated. They are all Anglophiles, and they see, this is the leaders of many of these countries, see more in common with the Western values of the likes of the United Kingdom and more and more and more with Israel than they do with the kind of Muslim Ummah that's spread throughout the region and across the world. I think there are 2 billion, would there be 2 billion Muslims in the world? That's an awful lot of people who support the Palestinians. And I think it's important that if we look at the fact that a lot of these places like Saudi Arabia, they're not democracies. You can't vote in the government. You can't vote out bad policies. You have to put up with the dictatorship of the monarchy. I think what we saw in Morocco, and indeed I was in Marrakesh on holiday during the World Cup, and I saw people come out with the Moroccan flags during Morocco's games that they played during the World Cup, and I saw people with the Palestinian flags celebrating too. So, you know, basically, until they get rid of the dictators in West Asia, we will continue to have the schism between the people and the governments. And the problem is the people are unarmed and the governments are armed, and a lot of them will not hesitate to bring the troops out onto the street to repress any dissent within the nation. And we've seen people go to jail for 10, 20, 30 years for putting up a tweet about the about Mohammed bin Salman as the Saudi Arabian leader, people going to jail for a tweet. So while there is corruption, and while these corrupt leaders move closer and closer to the other corrupt leaders like Netanyahu within the region, I see no real opportunities other than the axis of resistance to stand against Zionism and to stand up for Palestinian rights under international law.
Well, Elijah, we seem to be unfortunately witnessing a record year of Israeli atrocities against Palestinians in the occupied territory. Israel has also just approved 9 more settlements, which are all illegal under international law. Do you think this scenario would be the same if Muslim countries were united in standing up against the Israeli regime? And how likely, in your perspective, do you see this happening anytime soon?
It's very unlikely for the Arab countries and the Muslim countries to stop their contact and normalization with Israel, because they have chosen the path that is, as your guest rightly said, there's a huge gap between the population and the leaders. So the leaders are taking unpopular decision, and we've seen the reaction of the population. Therefore, as long as these leaders are not in connection with the people, they will insist on their position because they are more or less intimidated by the U.S. bullying. And the U.S. is the bully of the world, imposing its will on all the countries. Otherwise, they will wage war or impose sanctions to cripple the population and turn the population unhappy against their rulers. This is why it is very unlikely for these countries to stop the relationship with Israel and to impose on the Israelis to respect the right of the Palestinians. Moreover, on the other hand, I think that what is happening today is not negative, is not all bad. They're having a very extreme right-wing government in Israel and having extreme measures by the Israelis is increasing the resistance, is making the voice louder among the Palestinians, making them more united. New groups are coming out. Youngsters between the age of 20 and 25 are responding to the Israeli aggression. They're rejecting it, including in the West Bank, those who were given Israeli identity, those who never known the PLO or Democratic Palestinian Group or all the other different factions who started fighting the armed war against the Israelis in the 70s and in the 80s and in the 90s. So we are seeing a new generation, thanks to the behavior of the Arabs who tend to separate themselves from the Israeli cause, thanks to the radical behavior of the Israeli responsible, thanks to the extreme measures that the Israelis are pushing the Palestinians to the extreme, then there will be a reaction. And perhaps this reaction, if it increases and the Palestinians are united in Palestine, well, maybe the changes can happen. And that could influence on the Arab, like Qatar, who maintains some relationship with Israel. Nonetheless, it has a position where it is asking for the right of the Palestinians, which is better than nothing, although maintaining contact with the Israelis. On the other hand, we see the Saudis having good contact with the Israelis, but not declaring their normalization, and they have also meetings, etc., and without mentioning the Emirates, Bahrain, and other countries. So all this behavior of the Arab leaders is in the eyes of the population is shameful. In the eyes of the Palestinians, well, they know what they think, but they're voice it because they don't want to stop any possible support to the Palestinian population that is under the Israeli threat.
Right. Well, back to Belfast. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli leaders have said that Iran is Israel's main enemy. The significance of that, and why do you think that they continue to say that?
I'd say their main enemy for the Israelis is the people they're murdering on the West Bank and the people they have under an inhuman, unacceptable, illegal siege in Gaza. They will claim that Iran is their number one enemy because if you are Israeli, if you are the prime minister of that country, if you are a right-wing, right-leaning, fascist-thinking thug in the government in Israel, you're going to look around and say, who are our friends and who doesn't like us? And I believe Syria was attacked because it stands for Palestine. I believe Iran will constantly be under threat. We have heard recently of the American administration taking the MEK off the terrorist watch list, which implies that the CIA are potentially going to start arming them, which is where I would see that leading to. So Israel, as an apartheid Zionist state, sees Iran as the leader of the axis of resistance against Zionist apartheid expansionism in West Asia. It sees Iran as helping the people of Lebanon when they try to give them fuel, of helping the people of Gaza to break the siege, of standing side by side, shoulder to shoulder with the people of Syria in denying Daesh and Western hegemony the opportunity of destroying the Syrian Arab Republic. So you have a secular Arab Republic closely allied to a theocratic Shia Persian government. So what we have are they're not diametrically opposed, they're two separate systems that have come together in common humanity to help each other in the face of the regional aggressor, which is the Western-inspired colony of Israel.
Well, what about that, Elijah? You just heard what Frost said, and I just want to pick up on that because he talked about the type of government that Iran has as opposed to Syria. And main thing that the Western countries a lot of times and the Israelis talk about is Iran and sectarianism. And, of course, it's always trying to pit the Persians against the Arabs or the Turks. And isn't the situation actually what is happening with the Islamic Republic's support of the Palestinian cause actually an answer to all of that, that it has nothing to do with being a Shia or being a Persian or not being an Arab, but actually the resistance and being against oppression is actually key for Tehran over anything else?
This is a very good question. People don't read the Iranian constitution that forces Iran to support the oppressed people around the globe. And if we see the behavior of Iran supporting the Palestinians, who are majority Sunnis, supporting the Lebanese, Shia and Sunni, supporting the Syrian, who are majority Sunni, going to Iraq, and the first Iranian plane landed in Erbil in Kurdistan against ISIS, and not only in the Shia area, it has landed in Kurdistan. And Iran going to Venezuela, supporting the Venezuelan population that is oppressed by the American for so many years, it showed that Iran has a certain ideology that, notwithstanding all the pressure and all the sanctions, is really abiding by its ideology and abiding by its code, and is really fulfilling this code. Even if Iran is under harsh pressure, it is managing to create allies unconditionally. That is the key of success of Iran, and this is why Iran represents a serious danger to the West.
Okay.
It can't be accused of sectarianism because it's diversity of the support.
All right. I'd love to continue talking about this, but we're out of time. I appreciate both of you being with me. Elijah McNair out of Brussels, Fra Hughes out of Bath, Belfast, both journalists. A pleasure talking to you. And with that, that brings us to the end of this spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,650 kilohertz, every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kHz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz, every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio Call of Islam page. We're welcome to another episode of the program Question and Answer on Islamic Beliefs. I'm Atah, the host of this program. With me in the studio, we have a very special guest speaker from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Nur Muhammadpour. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
Okay, Sheikh Nur Muhammadpour, for today's discussion, we want to talk about a very controversial question, and that is especially regarding the punishments of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the Day of Judgment. It is believed that we can say an oppressor will be punished by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the Day of Judgment, and different formats have been mentioned for this kind of punishment. Sometimes say, for example, it is a hell fire, he'll be on fire, he'll be burnt, or he'll be, we can say, that's right. These are some of the extreme formats of punishment for an oppressor in Islam. First of all, let's talk about the definition of punishment of Islam on the Day of Judgment by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Is it, as we say, burning? Is it the same burning that we have in this world? As we say, putting it on fire, is it the same fire? First, let's talk a little bit about the, we can say, the nature of this kind of punishment of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And then we'll go to our next questions.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. You know that about the punishment of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala in the Day of Judgment, actually we have a lot of verses of Noble Quran dealing with the concept of punishment. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, we can say that the whatever we do in this world that